It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 637 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, it's another excellent crowdfunding doubleheader as I talk with Paul Cornell and Rachel Smith from Who Killed Nessie on Zoop.gg, then Matt Shore from Jesus Christ Demon Slayer on Kickstarter. It all begins with a fun interview with Paul Cornell and Rachel Smith from Who Killed Nessie on Zoop.gg. Here's how the book is described. Every year, legendary creatures from all over the world gather for an annual convention, but never has there been a murder. It's a comedy cryptozoological whodunit about finding confidence through rationality and accepting a world of mysteries by solving one. We talk about who the characters are, how this convention story resembles real-life gatherings, and explore what else is coming soon from these great creators. Be sure to back this project before it concludes on Thursday, April 25. Then everything concludes with the return of Matt Shore, who has a new Kickstarter underway for Jesus Christ Demon Slayer. Here's the description. Legends are whispered in the darkest corners of damnation, describing a time when the Son of God entered the domain to challenge Lucifer himself. Known for his teachings of peace on earth, the Messiah waged a one-man war across the shores of hell, slaughtering any demon, devil, or false god foolish enough to stand in his way. Now the story can be told. We discuss how this tale came to be, who the characters are, and what else Matt and his Shore Manor studio have heading our way in the months ahead. Be sure to back this Kickstarter before it concludes on Friday, April 26th at 12:48 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what they all have to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. Every year, legendary creatures from around the world gather for an annual convention, but never before has there been a murder. Who Killed Nessie, a new graphic novel by Paul Cornell, the award-winning comics writer, and Rachel Smith, the award-winning comics writer slash artist, is a comedy cryptozoological whodunit about finding confidence through rationality and accepting a world of mysteries by solving one. And today I'm talking with the creators. I was like to go ladies first. So Rachel, how are you?
I'm good. Oh my goodness, that book sounds really, really amazing. Never heard someone else read it out like that. That sounds really cool. Really good, thank you. How are you, Wayne?
Good. I try to narrate these things interestingly so that
it was really good.
Okay, and welcome back to the podcast, who's been on several times before. Paul Cornell, how you doing, Paul?
Oh, I'm fine. How are you tonight?
Good. It's good to talk with you. Let's start off with, Paul, why don't you talk about how this book came to be, where the idea came from and stuff like that?
Well, it came out of a conversation between me and Rachel. Where we've always wanted to work together. We've done a couple of little things. We did a strip about cricket in the 24 Panels anthology. We did a couple of backup strips because Rachel, in Doctor Who Four Doctors, because Rachel did a long run of the David Tennant comedy backup strips. And so we've always wanted to work together and on a longer form thing. And we just started riffing. Rachel, do you want to?
Yeah, Paul and I had a Zoom meeting one time and just kind of bouncing ideas off one another. And we both realized that we loved, well, Paul had a real love of cryptids. And I really love yokai, like the Japanese monsters, kind of, the Japanese answer to cryptids. So we talked about maybe doing something where all those come together. We came up with Paul really wanted to do kind of a whodunit murder mystery, so we thought the most famous cryptid, maybe Nessie, could get murdered, and then it all happened from there. Paul, I think you had a picture of the cover in your head.
I just saw the cover of Nessie, the chalk outline of Nessie lying on the floor of a ballroom surrounded by cryptids, and I could see Rachel's art doing that.
Wow.
Yeah, and because Rachel's art is amazingly cute. And when it wants to be, and heartbreaking at times, but real sometimes, and sometimes all three things at once. But what I really wanted to do was gather yowies and stink apes and the Beast of Bodmin and the Kraken and all in one hotel for a convention.
I've got to ask you, Paul, because the last time I talked with you, we were talking about a comic that dealt with a comics convention.
Yeah.
And now here we are talking about this one. It's sort of a monster convention. Conventions are fertile ground for storytelling, apparently, Paul.
Well, the aforementioned Con and On, the collected volume, came out on the same day this launched. So it's been kind of a busy week. And I just think they are wonderful opportunities for paths to cross and subplots to get mixed up. You see, what happens is it's a hotel on the Great Lakes, because they need big lakes to put the lake monsters in. And the human staff have learnt to go away that weekend, but they've got to leave somebody. So they've left the intern, Lindsay Grockle, who's new at this and just getting over a breakup and has no idea that cryptids are real. And so is the only human member of staff, and is woken by the talking cat, the Beast of Bodmin Moor, who tells her that the Loch Ness Monster has been murdered, and she's the only being on site who they all trust to be a neutral observer and solve the murder. So it's about being thrown in at the deep end. And
Wow, it's really something. So you guys know who did the deed, right?
Yeah.
We do, yeah. Okay.
Are we going to find out let me go and say one thing. If people get mad at me because I don't say this soon enough, this project will be completed on April 25th. And because it's zoop.gg, I'm not exactly sure what time. I'm sure as we get there, it'll show that. But the way that you get there is you go to zoop.gg/CAT. /Who Killed Nessie, all one word.
Well, or you could just search for Zoop Nessie. Z-O-O-P-N-E-S-S-I-E. That will get you there.
Oh, good. Okay. I didn't know that, so that's good to know. So right now, you are doing very well. Of course, we're recording this early. You are about a third of the way there.
Yep.
It's $20,000 is the amount you're shooting for, and I'm sure you're going to get it because it looks like a really fascinating story. Now, I've got to ask Rachel, why did you choose this art style for it? Because it has a little bit of an anime feel to it, a little bit of a YA type feel to it. Is this one of the normal styles you prefer to work in, or was this something you picked just for this book?
Oh, this is just my style. I don't have any others. I've always been quite cartoony. I suppose when I was a kid, I used to try and draw anime style. I used to copy all the Sailor Moon pictures and stuff. This is just my one and only style. And I think it lends itself quite nicely to cryptids. I really enjoy, even though I'm the one drawing them, I really enjoy seeing all the cryptids in my style. They're all
I love kind your of grumpy funny fairies.
And, oh, sorry, go on, Paul.
I love your grumpy fairies.
Thanks. The thing that keeps making me giggle, and it shouldn't because it's my own drawing, is the picture, the page we did with the hotel. You can see it on the Zoop page. With the hotel, the splash page with the hotel, and it's the grumpy unicorn, which is pretty much right in the center of the page. And it's just his face just makes me laugh every time I look at that page. He seems to get grumpier every time I open that image. But yeah, it's my only style, Wayne. I can't go any other way.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, as long as it's good and it works really well and it looks great. The pages I've seen on the zoop.gg page are really nice, really great. It's got a little realism involved, but a little bit of fantasy into it. So that gives you the perfect chance to do the cryptoids or whatever you call them. I never know what the word
cryptoids
is.
Cryptoids I like. I like cryptoids.
And you ask if we're going to reveal who did it by the end of the book. And yes, we are. That would be all four if we did it. You know, like just sort of, and you'll have to decide yourself. No, we do a big, you know, Poirot-style unveiling at the end, you know.
Oh, good, because
one of you mysterious beasts has murdered the Loch Ness Monster.
Now, see, the thing of it is that some people do stories, and this is the first chapter. And so that's what I'm trying to see. This isn't just the first chapter. This is a complete story.
Yes, it's a complete story, yeah. One and done. We may murder another cryptid next year. Who knows?
No one is safe. But yeah, you can just have this book. It's a one storybook.
This reminds me a little bit of the show that's really popular called Traitors.
Oh yes, it's very like that.
It's they are in a hotel or they're in a castle sometimes, and sometimes they're in a lodge in different places. It depends on where they're doing it. The New Zealand one is in a lodge. Every other one seems to be in the same castle over in Scotland, I think. And so it looks a little like that. So I imagine this is going to...
Well, it's the Traitors if Yeti were involved.
Okay. That works.
I mean, now, maybe a Mongolian death worm instead of Claudia Winkleman, you know.
Pretty interchangeable.
Well, now I've got to ask Rachel. Lindsay, is she based on somebody? She's got green hair, which, of course, is perfect for this story. Did you draw her to resemble someone you know? Is it a creature? Did she come out of your imagination? Where did she come from?
Lindsay came from, so Lindsay's going through a breakup, which is, I think, where the hair comes from. I think she's dyed that recently. as a kind of, you know, finding herself a haircut. I have a lot of love for Lindsay. I've been where Lindsay is, not like exactly, but I've been through bad breakups, and she's just trying to figure out who she is. And she's taken on this new job, which is a lot more than she's bargained for. She's our protagonist. I actually love her very much. I feel like we've all been Lindsay at some point in our lives. We've all not quite fitted in to our lives. We've not quite figured out who we are yet. And I'm hoping people will love her as much as I will.
Does she look like you at all, or does she look like a person that you know? Or is she was just drawn out of your imagination?
Just my imagination. No, I wish I looked like Lindsay. Lindsay's cool, but yeah. No, she's completely made up.
Okay. Now, Paul, let's talk about the cryptoids or cryptids or whatever they are. How did you decide which cryptids were going to be in this book?
Well, basically, I said all of them. There really wasn't that much of a selection process. I opened the door wide and said, if you're weird and possibly don't exist, in you come, all the way from the Orang Pendek to the Owl Man, and at all points in between. And Rachel added a lot of lovely lore about the Japanese yokai. I believe I'm saying that right, yokai?
Yokai.
On the cover, which you'll see on the site, there's a little bunch of cups and saucers sitting there. And those are fascinating. And I only learned about them through her working on this book. Tell them about the cups, Rachel.
So the cups are the Tsukumogami, which are one of my favorite yokai, which are like any kind of item that a Japanese person has that is over 100 years old. So once they're over 100 years old, they are kind of imbued with a spirit and they come to life. So in my world, I think that means the cups can walk around and talk to people. Probably not if you're a yokai, like, I don't know, professor. But in my world, that means they can talk to people.
I've got a bound volume of Punch downstairs, which I'm going to have to be careful with, certainly.
I love it. But yeah, apparently in Japan, people throw things away when they're 99 years old because they get a little bit spooked by the fact that this thing might have a spirit entering it. I love that. I love that kind of stuff. So I'm glad we were able to bring that sort of thing to this book.
Well, there's a funny page on there. There's fairies are sitting, and one of the fairies is eating Yeti-flavored potato chips.
Yeah, I like that page a lot. The attitude that Rachel has given the fairies. I like the shocked look on their faces when they think, no, it's just an advertising gimmick. It's not really Yeti. And they turn the pack around and look at the ingredients and the little shocked looks. And then yeah. I know well.
Well, I started it, so I may as well continue. That was funny stuff. There's so many good. This is just rife with comedy and stuff like that, especially because you've got everybody in a contained space, and that means you got to deal with stuff. There's consequences to what you do.
Yep.
Because whenever I go like the conventions and stuff, I got a couple Star Trek conventions coming up. Whenever I go there, things happen, and when you come, because you're around people that are similar to you or have similar interests, when you come out, sometimes it's a shock. You know, you get out in the real world and you're in trouble.
Yeah, I love conventions, and part of it is that sensation of lots happening in a very condensed time, and every hour being packed with detail and information and people that you haven't seen together since last year. And there's something about that convention culture that rises and falls, the way rumors come and go, the way in-jokes come and go, that's just delicious. And I'm thinking we'll show some of cryptid convention culture. Maybe we'll see a little snippet of the welcome party before Nessie dies. I mean, it would be nice to see something of the Loch Ness monster in a book with her name on it. But
you did say I get to draw her.
Yes,
so
I did.
I'm gonna hold you to that. I would really like to draw Nessie before she dies.
How far along is the book at this point? How many pages is it going to be when all said and done? And how many pages have you got finished?
Well, when it's all said and done, it'll be 100 pages. We've picked and chosen. We've done bits here and there. But, you know, the shape of the story is there. Hence, Rachel hasn't drawn Nessie yet, but she will.
But I will.
Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about the cat, shall we? Because there's a page that shows the cat at the food bar or whatever, and the cat is going, and all of a sudden is able to get up and pick up and take food to the table. And there's a funny from Mark in there about mortal privilege. You'll be checking your mortal privilege, the cat goes, and she goes, oh, sorry.
Yeah, the cat is the Beast of Bodmin Moor, which is a cryptid, what they call an alien big cat, an ABC. These big black cats that are meant to be on the moors in the west of England. And I have him talking with, what's actually my natural accent? This, which is a pirate accent, really, because this is where pirates come from. Who are? And if the wind changes while I'm talking like this, I'll just stay like this for the rest of the evening, you know? And Bob, the Beast of Bodmin Moor, talks like that. And he's very much our heroine's guide to the world of cryptids. He is the Watson to her homes, as it were, and lets her know what everything is and what everything means, so she is able to make deductions.
So Bob is the cat?
Yes, he is the cat, the beast of Bodmin Moor.
Okay, because on the Zoop page, there's a wonderful quote from it. And it says, "You may not believe in us, Lindsay," says Bob, "but we believe in you."
Mm.
That's a great quote. I thought that when I saw that, ooh, that's a good one. I like that. So this is obviously as she's trying to figure out what's going on. Bob has to, you know, back her up and say that they believe in her. It's interesting that they choose her to solve the mystery instead of one of their own.
Only so, human on site. And and thus the only person who's not got a stake in this, if you see what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Maybe can we talk about some of the cryptids? We talked about fairies. We talked about the cat. Nessie, of course. What other cryptids are people going to find in this book we should look out for?
Well, Rachel, do you want to talk about Drawing the Hairies, the Yeti and the Sasquatch?
Oh, itself? The Yetis. Yeah. So the Yetis are in their own little clique. They were pretty fun to draw. Who's in the Hairies, Paul? The Yeti?
The Sasquatch, the Skunk Ape.
Yeah.
Every now and then the Jersey Devil, because the Jersey Devil varies its shape completely. Mm-hmm.
There's also a lot of other...
the Yowie.
There's also a lot of other water-based beasts. We have the Kraken. The Kraken who likes a chai tea in the morning. Is that right? A chai latte.
Yes.
I love that.
Just a tentacle coming out of the lake.
Yeah.
There's Champ, the lake monster from Lake Champlain in the States. Virtually every Scottish loch has a lake monster, so there'll be a little gaggle of, if you like, the family Ness. You know, the one. I'm not going to attempt a Scottish accent, but they'll be vociferous in the need to find the killer.
Is one of them the Hydra? There's one with 1, 2, 3, about 5 heads. Is that or 6 heads? Is that a Hydra? Which one is that?
Yes. Right.
Okay.
That is a Hydra.
Okay.
Yeah, there's some good ones in there too.
It's a firebird too on the left hand side. Is that a phoenix?
That's a phoenix, yes.
Okay, all right. So I'm figuring some. There's that unicorn in there. There's the two look like ghosts standing behind the unicorn.
The unicorn is very grumpy.
Why is the unicorn grumpy?
You'll have to ask Paul. He's very judgmental. That's it.
Yes, it's a judgmental unicorn. Basically, it won't let Lindsay come anywhere near him. And for reasons, which I don't think we'll ever explain. We'll let the adult audience draw their own conclusions.
And there's a cyclops.
Yes.
On the left. Yeah, there's one cover his hands up in front of his face. I don't know which one that is. So I guess we get to find out who these are as we go through the story, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely.
All right, because what's the one with the ram horns? That intrigues me.
The Minotaur?
Is that what that is, Minotaur? Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't know. I'm trying to think about my cover now. Okay. It might be the Minotaur, yeah.
Okay. So there's all kinds of good stuff going on there. It's... I guess this could be something of an education as far as cryptoids go, because I don't recognize some of them.
Oh yeah, I mean,
you recognize the little white ghost things with the long legs.
Yeah, where are they?
I now can't remember the names. Paul, what are they?
I assume they are part of your Oh, those are the made-up internet ones. The
yes.
ones with the big white heads and the long, long arm. I cannot remember their names for the life of made-up. But we know of an origin point for them, and they are a deliberate sort of internet meme cryptid reaction.
Ah,
and there's also a wyvern. Down in the front here, I think there's a Cerberus, a three-headed dog.
Yep.
That is the Jersey Devil in one of its forms. The little guy with the snout and the little wings, like a cape in front. And there's Oh, it's the Jackanope, and anyway, all will be revealed.
Okay. Now, it starts on a Friday night, right?
Well, yes.
Okay, because a lot of conventions, people get there Friday, but the convention stuff doesn't actually start till Saturday sometimes. So they're all gathered in this hotel on Friday night, and it's early Saturday morning when Lindsay gets the cat to come and tell her they need her. And now, I just have to ask, though, on the cover, which room are they in?
That's the ballroom.
Oh, the ballroom. Okay.
A stylistic representation of the ballroom. And it has got curtains all round, but, you know, there's only so many things you can do on a cover.
Right. So that's going to be good. So Lindsay, of course, has to struggle because she's the very logical and realistic kind of person. She's thrown into this murder mystery with all kinds of creatures previously she didn't believe in.
Mm-hmm.
So now she has to but she's the right person for the job because she understands the logic and seeing patterns and things like that. Because you see her, she's looking at she puts up a board and starts linking creatures to creatures and see who's, interacting with stuff like that. And she says at one point, did the Loch Ness Monster make enemies? Anglers, wildlife photographers, paleontologists, maybe a love triangle. Does the Kraken have needs? So she's going. One of the fun things about this book is to go where I haven't been done before, and that is to deal with the cryptoids in a situation that we're more familiar with, a murder. And so that's the fun part. It's going to be to see how people react and how people are going to and who actually did it. That. Because Nessie is a big creature. That's going to take something to kill that creature. So that eliminates some of the smaller ones, I think. I mean, you know, I have to read the book to find out. But that's what I would think. But, who knows? Of course, she's got to go through and analyze all this. So that's going to be some fun to watch her, put things together. Now, are they're staying there through Sunday night? Or what's the deal with how long they're going to be there?
I think maybe somebody's got to have to lock the doors and say nobody leaves until the murder is solved, because it would be a little bit of bathos if she it took her until Monday morning, but everybody had gone, and she'd have to send them letters.
But the employees are going to come back, though, aren't they? The one that took a vacation, so she's under a deadline too. So
there very much is a deadline, but then again. You want to catch the murderer. Mm-hmm. And I suspect she will before the deadline runs out.
Okay. Mm. Okay. So that's going to be 100 pages. And how many pages are done, Rachel, as far as your artwork?
Just the ones that are on the Zoop page right now.
So about six?
Yes. But I have some penciled out and stuff.
Okay. And there's original artwork available as part of our... as part of our backer levels for those pages.
That'd be good. Now, do you have a deadline when you expect this book to be completed?
Yeah, I think on the Zoop page it says next autumn.
Oh, okay. So you got some time. That's good.
Yes, yeah.
That works. Stories like this are worth the wait. People, they're sitting there going, well, why isn't it done already? Well, you got to do it, and you got to do it right.
And so, I think the thing with crowdfunders as well is that you're funding the people getting paid for their work, and you get to feel like you're a part of the creation.
And there's very much
what this is now.
And there's very much a guarantee with Zoop that if you back a project, they keep you in touch with continual messages from the team, and for sure. We'll be showing some of the process as we go, and they kind of they basically offer to keep us in line in a way that Kickstarter would not.
That's good, because Paul, you've done stuff with Zoop before.
Yeah, I did the completed Saucer Country with them, and they really delivered. Our backers were satisfied. They got a finished product and I couldn't be more delighted with the way everything worked out.
Now, let's see. On the page right now, there's a $15 level for the digital copy, and 45 people have claimed that. But the big one is the soft cover, which is $26, and you have 136 people, as we're talking, have claimed that. I expect those numbers to go up, but kind of says people like the print version rather than I like both, but my problem is I've got so many books. The book stack I'm supposed to read is as tall as I am.
Yeah.
And so I'm in trouble. So I often get digital versions so I can carry it with me and read it like on my phone or my iPad and stuff like that.
Well, that's very wise. The we've also got some neat extensions going on here. There's you can get a signed copy with we're going to prepare a signing sheet that looks like a hotel guest book. And you can get a remarked version. I only learned what this was on this project, that Rachel will do you a little doodle. You can come and hang out with us on a Zoom and watch Rachel draw. And I'll be like a spare part. I'll just be going, yeah, look at her drawing. There it is.
No, you'll be great. You'll be doing the main work. I'll just be, I'm nervous about that. I hope.
That's a $320 level, but you've already got one out of the five claimed.
Yeah, absolutely. Nice. And there's also the original art. And if we get past our goal, we're going to get a postcard of our cast drawn by Alison Sampson from Ministry of Truth and Emma Vicelli from Life is Strange, who have radically different art styles. And that's going to be fun. And if we get to our highest possible level, we'll get some nice varnishing on the cover.
Spot varnish on that cover.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Nice.
I love that stuff. Because sometimes to put like a thing that identifies which page you're on. Oh, what is that thing?
Not a bookmark.
Well, not a bookmark, but the thing that's in part of the book and it's like a string.
Oh, like a string. Yeah.
What's that called?
I've seen it referred to as a ribbon. I know what you mean.
That's good. Yeah, ribbon is a good word for that, I think. So
I think it's called a string thing.
A string thing. We should have had a string thing.
We should have got a string thing.
Well, 100 pages. That we could use that.
String thing.
That would be good. So, okay. So, as far as are you going to do remarks of? Are people going to be able to request that you do a remark of a monster, or what's going to happen with that?
I don't know about that. Sure. I don't know,
don't really know how the remark process works. I'm sure we'll find out. But
I'll do all my drawings. Will be really cool. Don't worry about it.
Okay, so it sounds really good. And once again, this is going to conclude on the 25th of April. And be sure to go to zoop.gg/seasoncat/WhoKilledNessie, all one word.
Or just search for Nessie and Zoop with a P.
Yeah, I'll get you there.
Yeah,
that's good. See, that's a smart way to go about it. I do the hard way every time.
No, I appreciate you reading it now, though.
Yeah, absolutely. It took some reading. As soon as I hear forward slash, I'm in a different place. And
so I'm curious, Paul, because you said something. You intimated that if this goes over well, we might have a Who Killed Something Else next year.
Yeah. We've joked about not next year, after we deliver the first one, but maybe starting next year. We've joked about, Who Killed Nessie 2, Nessie's back and she's dead again, and Who Killed Nessie 3, Stop Killing Nessie. I think that actually we would have another murder mystery of a cryptid, cryptid. Who Killed Mothman?
Yeah. There's all kinds of things you can do with this kind of stuff. This could be an ongoing series.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Because, it's with traitors and stuff like that. Every night somebody gets murdered until the final thing. And if a traitor takes the money and there's a regular person there, and I always hate it when they get to the end and they trust this other person and they find out that person was actually a traitor and is taking all the money anymore. They run out of the room and I feel bad for them. And the traitor was gloating that they got all this money. And I'm always like, that's a fricker, that's a no good guy. Cause I, there's a, the, they just did the U, I think it was the UK, the second one. The first one, the faithfuls got it. The second one, the traitor won it. And boy, the woman that trusted him ran out of the room sobbing after he took all the money. So I was like,
he's so bad at that show.
Oh, I don't know if I could, but there's all different versions of it. There's New Zealand. We're watching the New Zealand one. There's the UK. There's the American one. Yeah. There's the Australian one. There's all these different, and let's face it, it's the cheap show to make. You're in this one place and all you got to do is send these people on errands all the time.
I would just be nice and honest throughout. And I think that would maybe would not win me the prize, I suspect.
Well, you know, the we just watched the first two episodes in New Zealand, and this one girl was picked, and she decided to stay in the background, but she stayed so far in the background that they got suspicious of her.
Yeah.
Right out of the bat.
How would you do, Rachel? Would you, because you've got some skills. You've got some ninja.
I haven't seen the show. I'm so sorry. I don't really know what you're talking about.
Okay. Well, it's in the US, it's on Paramount Plus. Okay. It's all over the place. There's several versions of it in the UK, I think. So you guys should be able to see it.
What would I have to do in the show?
Well, what happens is that they get about 18 people together. They get them around the table, and the person who's the host puts, they get blindfolds on and they walk around, and that person puts their hand on the shoulder of whoever they choose to be traitors.
Okay.
And then they have to go.
They didn't like it.
Well, I hate it when the traitor wins. Because,
and of course, you'd be doing it. You'd be doing a webcomic daily from. Yeah. The setting.
I was wondering if that's what was happening here, if we had like a traitor set up where every night a different cryptid got killed.
Oh my God.
Well, we don't have time.
Yeah.
So anyway, you could always do who's the traitor cryptid kind of thing with that.
I'm sure if Rachel sees it, we might have a bit of this in the second one. What are we talking about, a second one? That's ridiculous.
Well, I think it's a great story. The things that I see of it are really engaging and fun and mysterious, which I love. I'm one of those murder mystery fans. I love to watch and find out who did it. So now I'm curious as to when I look over all the people, I'm going like, who could have done it? Could it be the cat, for pity's sake? So there's all kinds of things to buy. It looks like it's a great fun story. Something I have never read before, which I always enjoy.
Oh, that's great.
So it really looks terrific.
Well, thank you so much. Can I just get Rachel to plug her Nap comics? Because I love Nap comics.
I was going to ask, what are you guys up to? Go ahead, Rachel. What things are you working on besides this?
Thank you, Paul. I'm making autobio comics about being a new mum. Over at rachelsmith.org/nap. That'll get you there. And or you can go to Webtoon and just search Nap Comics with a IX. I make comics about what it's like bringing up my son Henry. And they're funny and heartwarming and heartbreaking and very real and... Yeah, I'm very proud of them. Thank you, Paul.
One thing we need to point out, though, is that your name is spelled R-A-C-H-A-E-L, right?
That is correct, yeah.
So you got to be sure if you go looking for it, make sure you know how to spell the name right, because the internet is a unforgiving place when it comes to spelling.
It's Rachel spelled the awkward way.
Spelled with an X.
Yes, that's it. I was doing with a podcast with somebody, and he wanted everything to have an X on the end of comics, because that's what indie comics do over in that area, and so that's what he wanted. And when I pulled everything over here to the U.S., I just changed it to the regular comics. I don't get the X business, but that's all right. Now, speaking of which, Paul, what are you up to besides this? What are you working on?
Well, I've got some comics coming out this year, which I cannot yet talk about. Conanon Collected Volume was out this week, and I'm very proud of that. My Robert Altman movie, 40 Years in the Life of a Big Comics Convention. Comics industry satire, lots of real stories. And I'm nominated for a Hugo Award for The Witches of World War II. Me and Valeria Berzo, the artist, are up for best graphic story or comic in the prestigious World Science Fiction Convention Hugo Awards, which will be given out in Glasgow this summer. The Glasgow Worldcon. I'll be there. I hope they don't mind about Nessie.
That'll be fun. That'll be good. Now, Rachel, one last thing. If people want to follow you on social media, how do they do that?
Probably the easiest way is to go to rachelsmith.org and everything is on there. Rachel, R-A-C-H-A-E-L, smith.org. All my social media is on there.
Okay. And Paul, how about you?
PaulCornell.com. You'll find my link tree there. I'm on Blue Sky, Insta, and LinkedIn. And I'm also the co-host of Hammer House of Podcast, watching the Hammer horror movies in release order.
Oh, wow. Okay. Sounds interesting. Very good. Okay. Well, you guys are doing great stuff. Who Killed Nessie is the name of the book. And it's now available at zoop.gg. One last time, zoop.gg/seasoncat/ Who Killed Nessie. And it's going to conclude on April 25th or thereabouts. Sometimes it gets extended, so if it gets extended, we'll understand and we'll go with it. But you got over 200 supporters as we're talking, so I expect that number to go up. And the goal is $20,000, and you're well on your way to get it. So much success to both of you, and I hope this is one of those books that we get a nice long series of fun books to read. Who Killed Nessie and Who Killed Cryptoids and stuff like that. I think it sounds like a great idea. So you guys keep up the wonderful stuff, and I'm looking forward to more from you guys in the future.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support. For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support this show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/majorspoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance.
Hi, I'm Matt Shore. You might have heard about me from...
What? Nobody's heard about me?
Man. Okay, it doesn't matter if you don't know me. What matters is the terrifying story I'm here to tell.
The Son of God enters the pits of the damned to hack and slash his way across the shores of hell. That's the storyline in Jesus Christ Demon Slayer, a graphic novel, which is underway right now for Kickstarter. And I'm talking with Matt Shore from Shore Manor Studio. How's it going, Matt?
It's good. How are you doing?
Good. It's good to welcome you back. My understanding is this is the first one under Shore Manor Studio. Talk about that, if you would.
Sure. Yeah. My wife and I, it's sort of like an amalgamation of things. So we're major Halloween enthusiasts. And so we always transform our house and our yard into like this big miniature Halloween attraction for our neighborhood. And we started calling it Shore Manor. And I don't know, it just kind of stuck. And I just started using it for everything. And so it ended up becoming our comics label. And so, yeah, that's a really truncated version of what brought us where we are today.
Okay. Now, let's see. You've done other good things. You did Moby Dick. Mm-hmm. What was that called again, the full name?
It was Moby Dick Back from the Deep.
Right, right. And you've done other books too, though. That's not the only one, right?
Right, yeah. I have another comic called Monster Hunter for Hire. And I have a series of young readers books called Dino Horrors, where we have like a Zombiesaurus Rex and vampire velociraptors and a number of other awful things to really ruin some kids' childhood.
You know, what ruined my childhood was Bigfoot.
Bigfoot, okay.
If somebody mentioned Bigfoot, I could not sleep at night. I had to make sure nobody mentioned it at all. And I was just so terrified somehow Bigfoot was going to come in the middle of the town I lived in and find me somehow.
That is funny. My first exposure to Bigfoot, you're going to laugh, was Harry and the Hendersons. Oh. So whenever I think of Bigfoot, I think of Harry.
Oh, wow. See, when I saw that, I couldn't even watch the movie when it came along because it was too terrified of it.
I can get that because, I mean, it's a well-done film in that it starts out. It's pretty intense. So,
yeah. Well,
I can see that.
I remember, I always remember that photograph, supposedly when somebody took and the Bigfoot's walking and he turns to look back.
Yes. And,
oh, gosh, that haunts me. So it's, even to this day, decades later, I still see that. So now, are there other projects you're going on? Before we dive into this, are there any more of those coming along that we can talk about, or should we focus on the Demon Slayer?
Sure. I do have a couple other things I'm working on. You know how it is with indie projects. There's never any way to know what your timeline is because everything is kind of, always in flux. So I hesitate to ever mention them because then it's sort of like, well, when's it coming? When's it coming? And I never know. So I'll just, the vague, unsatisfying answer is, yes, there are a few other things I'm working on, but I don't want to mention them and jinx myself.
Okay. Well, I usually do this at the end, but why don't we at the beginning talk about if people want to keep up to date with Shore Manor Studio, how do they do that?
Okay, we are on two primary channels right now. We're on Facebook and on YouTube. So, and it's the same for both places. So just look up Shore Manor and you'll find it. So the complete address for both of them, it's facebook.com/Shore Manor and then youtube.com/@Shore Manor. YouTube wanted to be kind of difficult.
And Shore Manor is spelled S-C-H-O-R-R, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Because the internet is unforgiving when it comes to spelling. So we got to make sure we get those things straight. Now, another piece of information we need to know is that this project will only be funded if it reaches its goal by Friday, April 26th at 12:48 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. I always say that later in the thing. I get engrossed in the book, and then all of a sudden, I'm almost done with the interview, and I finally get to say it, and people say, why do you wait so long? It's because I'm interested in the book, doggone it. That's the thing I'm interested in, so I'm talking about that. So as we're talking, you have a really modest goal of $300.
Yes.
That's
because this one is I've already got the individual issues. This is one that we have, and I mentioned this in our Kickstarter video. It's always been the most popular item at every event I go to. And so it just seemed like it was time that it finally got the graphic novel treatment. And also, that way I can stop having to keep track of which of the three issues I need to reprint. Then just one book to print. But yeah, and ever since the pandemic, Kickstarters, I don't know, they've been a little bit lighter, I guess. So I've learned to be a little bit more modest in what I'm trying to attain, and I kind of figured out that number, $300, that'll get me enough to print the books that I need.
Okay, because you've already got the art, and you've already got you've done all this stuff. So you really, this is just for printing largely, right?
Yes, that's the only thing that we need to fund is the printing because, like you said, we've got the art, we have the layouts, and the other good thing about that is that once the Kickstarter's finished, if we're successful, I'll be able to do a pretty quick turnaround getting those printed and shipped out to everybody.
Well, you're almost two-thirds of the way there as we're talking. And of course, we're recording this ahead of time. But I think being a modest goal like that, you should be able to get that and then some, I hope.
I feel pretty good about it. Yeah. It'd be nice to get a little bit more. I'm not going to lie. I'm just enough of a capitalist to hope for that. But if we just reach our goal, I'll be satisfied.
Okay. Because you and I have talked about this in the past because it's been something we touched on a time or two. But I guess we'll give it the full treatment this time on that. So where in the world did the idea for Jesus Christ Demon Slayer come from?
It's been so far back, but it was a conversation I was having with somebody. They were actually talking about the Dan Brown novels back when they were still a really big hot button item, the Da Vinci Code, if anybody remembers that. They were saying that, you know, something controversial dealing with the Bible, you can really do something with. And somehow the conversation drifted over toward it's referred to as the harrowing of hell. And for those who aren't familiar with this, the harrowing of hell, there are a lot of ideas about it, but the basic gist of this legend, even though it's not mentioned anywhere in the Bible, is that in between his death and resurrection, Jesus traveled down to hell and set people free. There becomes obviously a lot of debate and conversation about all that, and it's a difficult thing to get into. So, but just as I thought about it, I just thought that is such a metal concept of Jesus going down into hell and like fighting the devil one-on-one on his turf. That's such a that's a badass Jesus, and I just think that's a cool story. And so, yeah, from there, that idea was just in my head, and I actually ended up talking with four different ministers from three different denominations just to get some varying input. And basically, the consensus was that there is no consensus. Like there are some who believe full on Jesus went down there and just kicked the crap out of Satan. And then there are others who, and then like, it's a full spectrum too, like all the way up to people that think it's just a metaphor and it nothing like this ever really happened. And like all theologians with all these varying ideas. So I just went with what I thought was the most over the top, most violent, most action packed concept that I could deal with. So yeah, in no way am I trying to claim that this is biblically accurate or whatever.
Yeah, because I got to see the books. There's three issues of it that I got to read, and I was this. They came to me before Easter Sunday, and yes. So I read these, and I was listening to the sermon on over Easter weekend, and I was, you know, I couldn't help but think about this book. And the pastor in my church is going that Jesus actually was, it was the Sabbath for that time of the year and in that part of the faith. And so Jesus was actually resting in the grave until after Sabbath was over, so that he never went out of the tomb, according to my pastor and stuff. So I was like, okay, that's different than what I was just kind of wondering, you know, how different, because in my church, that has zero, they mentioned none of that at all. So I was just sort of curious, are there particular denominations that put this forward? Because it's not in my church, so I'm just sort of curious as to where it actually came from.
Now I don't want to say that any one specific denomination like adheres to any one theory at all, because even within denominations there is debate over this. Like, is it real? Is it metaphor? Is it kind of real? Whatever, you know. So as far as like, I don't know that any one denomination can outright claim it. I have heard talk like this sort of a narrative being legitimate, I guess. I've heard it more from the more conservative of the denominations out there. So, I mean, just to pick on a few, you might hear something along these lines from either like very strict Pentecostal faiths or a very strict Baptist faith. Whereas if you're talking with somebody who might be like Episcopalian or Methodist or a little bit more kind of liberal leaning as far as Christians go, they don't really give that much credence to it. And really, as far as like whatever religion you adhere to, Christian specifically, this doesn't really have a whole lot of bearing on the whole point of Jesus' message anyway. It's I think it's just something that, I don't know, it's a cool image. And so I think that's why it kind of developed over the years. But as far as how it got to this notion, I've never been able to find like a good, you know, narrative about how it developed over the years, if that makes sense.
Because in the comic, Jesus is going through hell with a sword in his hand, and he's basically, you know, he's basically, you know, he's very warrior-like in the sense that he's got no shirt on, and he's, you know, looks like he's got sandals, I guess, or he's got so he's very much of a Conan. And long yes. hair and stuff, very barbaric kind of a look to him, which is kind of interesting because he doesn't look like that in any things that I've ever heard of in the Bible. Now, I did want to mention the one thing that this story reminds me of in the Bible is when Jesus goes into the temple and he gets mad at the money changers. Mm-hmm. And this is very uncharacteristic of him. He actually goes and he overthrows the tables. The money goes scattering all over. And he's quite angry because they've desecrated his father's house. And that's the only time I've ever heard. Now, of course, he didn't have a sword or any of that stuff. He just kind of threw tables over and things like that. And in fact, just before the crucifixion, you know, Peter pulls out a sword and actually cuts somebody's ears off. And Jesus, according to the narrative, goes up and puts the ear back on. Rather than let that go. So that's a very different look at Jesus from this.
I've always found, getting to that story about the money changers, I found that particularly interesting because when you look at his life story and everything, he was just such an absolute pacifist. Mm-hmm. I mean, his actions were always to help somebody. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter who they were, because there were some people that he just outright helped, mm-hmm. no questions asked, who were seen as very kind of low scum of the earth type people, but he didn't care. And people, you know, they chased him out of towns. They made fun of him. Ultimately, they killed him. And every time, he never retaliated and, in fact, asked for them to be forgiven. But the one time that he got so angry that he became violent was when people were basically making money off of the church. That's what drove him to that point.
Yeah. Well, he also was because he felt they were desecrating his father's name too. Here was the place where you worship his father, and he was very protective of his father. And when he saw that, he just, I think even the disciples and stuff were probably going, "What in the world is he doing?"
Yeah,
that's something he had never done, and he didn't do after that either. So yeah. That was such an interesting thing.
Yeah, and some of that, I guess, informed how we portrayed him in this. Because one of the things I wanted to make certain of was I knew I was going to be doing a lot of really over-the-top stuff. And you've read it, so you know what's in there. But I wanted to make sure that in the midst of all of this, that I'm treating this main character, Jesus, with like the utmost respect and presenting him as like this truly noble, ultimate hero. And I know that with something like this, there are going to be people with strong opinions, but I will say from my perspective, I felt like we accomplished that. And for the most part, really, I've always, whenever we would go to conventions, especially ones that, because I live in the Bible Belt, so whenever we do conventions around here, I'm always kind of on the lookout for somebody to give me the side eye or something, but the response has always been positive, and it's always what draws people to my table without fail. And honestly, both believers and non-believers tend to react positively. I thought one of the best accomplishments really was when a Catholic priest, and I have very minimal knowledge of the Catholic faith, but this Catholic priest actually bought all three one day of the convention, then came back later and said that he read it and he really liked it. And I was like, okay, that's pretty high praise from a denomination I know very little about. And this guy knew his stuff. He was like 8 or 9 years in seminary. So I just thought, you know, if he feels like I did a pretty decent job, then maybe I did okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, have you ever read the book from Ahoy Comics called Second Coming?
I have read some that feature Jesus. Is that the one where he's like a guy's roommate, or is this a
different one? Yes. Okay, he's a roommate with a Superman alike.
Yes.
Sunstar. And see, I have to be honest with you. When I see comics that deal with religious subjects, it's usually a downer.
It can be.
Well,
without a doubt.
I mean, pastors are always mean, ugly, terrible people who go around raping and pillaging and doing terrible things, even though they're supposedly a pastor. And so I've gotten really hesitant about doing that. But the book that kind of changed my mind on all that was Second Coming, because here's Jesus. He is, and of course it's completely fictional, he is the God who is the God of the Old Testament, the Father, is unhappy with the pacifist ways of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And what he wants to do is he looks at Sunstar, who is Superman, basically, and he sees him as the kind of guy he wants Jesus to be like. So what he does is he forces Jesus to share an apartment with Sunstar in the hope that that will influence Jesus to be more like what he sees himself as. And, you know, I have to say, I interviewed the guy who wrote that, and he had some very interesting things, some points to make in that book. And I really have to say, you know, you've got to go in it with an open mind. If you don't go in there with an open mind, you're going to be offended like crazy. But some of the stuff he does in there, just, you know, there's I live in the Orlando area, and there is a biblical theme park here. And in the book, there's a biblical theme park. And he scrapes that theme park all over the place. You know, Jesus gets up there and they think he's one of the actors, and he actually stands up and portrays himself at one point, and he starts talking. But the people don't like what he's saying. They want to hear what is normally in there, and they actually kick him out, because here's Jesus, the actual Jesus, being kicked out of the theme park where it's supposedly about him, which is, of course, was a wonderful thing. And of course, I always enjoyed this one banner, one sign that's up there and says, "Make God your quarterback." And I was always like, I don't know if I want God to be my quarterback. That's something about that doesn't work for me. So there was a lot of stuff in there. And I have to say, I came out of that book and I still enjoy reading. I don't know if he's finished with it all yet, but he's had two miniseries so far, and I've really enjoyed them both. And it gives me pause sometimes. I have to sit and think about things the way that he presents them. He does a very thoughtful job of that. And there's some of that in here too. I'm probably going to spoil something, but there's this one place where Jesus gets to the darkest of the places, and he comes across someone that I was surprised that he comes across there. I don't know if I want to spoil it, but
I think I know who we're talking about.
Yeah, Jesus basically says, "What have they done to you?" to this person, and his response and everything, just, you know, that was the closest that Jesus actually gets to the biblical Jesus in here. Really liked that. That really got me.
That was something that I was very conscious about, because, and I think I tried to establish this at the beginning, where like in the first page, his mission on earth was a mission of peace. Like with people, he will forgive, love everything. But when it comes to full on just demons in hell, the gloves are off, and we'll do whatever is necessary. So yeah, every demon he comes across, he's ready to deal out death and judgment with this flaming sword of his, which while I'm thinking about it, that's completely made up for this story. But the sword itself is actually from the story of the Garden of Eden. It's the sword of Uriel, who drove out Adam and Eve, if anybody really wants that little bit of trivia. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yes, whenever when he comes across people down there, he's very sympathetic. He's not callous towards them. He has full on animosity toward demons and monsters, but when it comes to people, it was very important to me that he remained very compassionate.
Well, even when you get to the very end, it's a very, let's just say that I guess it's Satan is the, you know, that when you get to the very end, it's going to have to be Satan. He's going to have to confront, and when he does that, the arguments that Satan makes is really interesting to me about how, well, I'm not going to spoil that because I think that's a really something to think about when you actually come across it. And what Jesus says after that confrontation is really interesting to me. And I'm not going to spoil that either because that's going to be something that I think that's going to be a real strong resolution to that. It has a really great, and I don't expect this in the comic book to have something that makes me say, okay, that makes a lot of sense. So I really liked it, particularly the end. And I always harp on comics. Endings are horrible things. People don't ever come up with good endings. They want to draw you into the next mini series so they don't actually end the story. This actually has a really interesting ending to me, and I'm very thoughtful.
I want to make sure and mention your frustration there. Can I give you an amen to that?
Yeah.
Because, yes, I share that frustration with comics and with movies because everybody's doing it now.
Oh gosh, there's and particularly the House of Ideas. Every miniseries starts off. This is it, the miniseries to end all miniseries. You're going to love this, the biggest, the best we've ever done. And then issue by issue, the enthusiasm peters out, and then we get to the end, and then you get to the very end. It's not really an ending. It says, okay, let's get to the next miniseries, which this time it really is the greatest thing we've ever done. And, you know, I've gotten to the place now when they have a miniseries, I couldn't care less. I can't get into that because there's no end. It's like the X-Men books. I hate to say it, but, you know, I if you haven't read every X-Men comic that has come out for the last 40 years, you're going to have real trouble because they're endlessly going to bring in some character I have never heard of. And they say, oh, that's, you got to go back 30 years. This character was an X-Men, or this, that, and the other, and this, and it came out that month. And it's like, who? So you got to go back and somehow figure out all this stuff. And so this is why I think the X-Men have reached the level that they're at now, is because people just, we don't have the budgets to be able to follow the X-Men, the thousands and thousands of dollars to keep up with them.
Yeah, and they're all... All of the, you know, series from the big two are guilty of that, but definitely X-Men, at least in my experience, is the just worst offender because just by its nature of the concept, it's like every other issue there's going to be a new character, and like nobody can just be a one-off. They've always got to be able to pull back on them. Like they have this database, they go back and look into them like, hey, here's somebody that's grow two arms. Well, what can we do with him again? It's like, well, maybe nothing. Just let it go.
Well, the Beast became a villain for a while. Now he's back to being a hero again.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, he was a bad guy for a couple of years, and then all of a sudden one day, oh, guess what? I'm a hero again. Oh, okay.
I couldn't handle that. I always liked Beast. So
yeah, well, that was the thing. There was a lot. It was like, I don't want to stay too far off the subject, but it was like when Captain America was discovered to be an agent of Hydra.
Oh, yes. I didn't read about it, but I remembered the uproar.
Oh, man. There's Steve Rogers in Captain America. Says, actually, I says, all these years I've been deceiving you. I actually work for Hydra. Hail Hydra, he goes. The uproar was like a volcano. And this guy had like a years-long storyline having to do with that. It lasted a couple months because they could not endure. The people were – the sales went woof down into the dirt, and they said, we got to stop this thing fast. And they did. And so this is the thing. But see, your book, it really ends nicely. It actually ties into – you know, the Bible and what happens at the end of it and stuff like that. So it ends very well, I thought. And you know, of course you have, you know, you've got bookends on the story. So, you know, it was nice to have things actually work out really well. So it's a very good book. And I can understand why people, all different stripes, probably really enjoy this because it's got some messaging in there that I think people deserve to hear and need to hear. Which I like.
Yeah, and you know, just getting to what you mentioned, like about like those big franchise series, it's a big reason why I've kind of moved away from them. I don't read them much, and I really almost exclusively read independent comics like myself. A little self-serving for me to urge people to read indie comics, I know, but for the reasons that you're describing is why I find them just a lot more satisfying, because they're not beholden to the fact that it's a business. And I don't want to say that like bad Marvel corporate telling stories. I mean, I get it that they got in this to make money, and like that's kind of the ultimate dream for so many people, to just make a living writing about your favorite superheroes. And if you're going to do that, well, it's got to be sustainable for an ongoing basis. So yeah, you've got to come up with all these new ideas and then somehow keep being fresh, but also never quite say the end, because you always have to come back for the next issue. So I know why they do it. I get it. But it's just why I'm at the point now that I really prefer reading independent series.
Well, it's like the current Batman books. I don't know if you know what's going on in Batman. Batman's my guy. I grew up, his last name is my first name. And so I've always been attached to that character. And right now what's going on in Batman is stuff that I can't imagine anybody think it was a good idea. Batman has been, I hate to spoil it, but this is where they are right now. So this is the thing. Batman has been replaced by the robotic version of Batman that he created in case he ever went wrong. Which right away I sat there and I said, hold on, that's not Batman. That's not the way this goes. And he's literally, and the robot Batman has actually convinced his Batman's son to join him in this business. And so I'm sitting, and Batman now is in jail in a cell next to the Joker, who now knows everything about him.
Because of course he does.
Yeah, well, so I'm going, I'm literally going, you know, okay, this is not Batman. This is some alternate reality. Is this Earth 2 Batman or something? Earth 65 Batman or something? Because this is not the Batman that I have read for years and years and years. And so I'm kind of like, what are they going to do after this? I mean, Batman going to go back to where he was before, or
Yep, because it always goes back to the status quo eventually. It's always a circle. Yeah, because
they've shredded
Superman, and the same thing happens there.
Oh gosh, they just ruin these guys, and I don't know why. You know, I read a Batman comic from the 40s. Somebody actually had a comic, and they let me read it, knowing I was a big Batman fan. There were four short stories in there, but they were very well done. And then each one had a beginning, middle, and end. And I got to the end of it, and I said, wow, four stories that actually ended in a book. And I couldn't believe it. And this is why they sold so well, because, you know, people like that. And it was really good, well done. And I just, you know, now, of course, this current storyline has been going on for years, a couple of years at least. And so it's trade paperback guy. This is what my brother used to call it. And I just.
Yes. I was thinking the very thing. Yep. That's where they make their money. So, yeah. Because again, it's a business. They got to stretch it out. And so that it's a business model, so that it keeps sustaining itself. And it's why the big two now, I think their focus is more on television and movies, whereas previously the focus was on the comics, and then the movies were like inspired by them. But now it's more like the comics are inspired by the movies. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm no longer reading the source material, and that's why I was reading it. So so what's the point anymore? So yeah, just again, all the more reason why I drift toward indies like my stuff. And I've made friends with several other comic book creators out there, and I always support them. If I had had a list in front of me, I'd list them all up, say check these guys out, because they do good stuff.
So now I gotta ask, of course, you've done this Jesus story, any other biblical stories that you might want to bring to, because I have to tell you an interesting thing, that one of my favorite stories in the whole Bible is the book of Esther.
That's a good one.
I love that one. And somebody was telling me how this pastor had decided that Esther was a foreshadowing of Christ.
Now, that's interesting.
And I was like, what? How is that even possible? You know, because I know the story very well, and I'm literally going through the whole story going, I don't know where that came from, because, you know, not everything is a foreshadowing of Christ. Sometimes those are just things that happened to people that got in there. So this to me is, so now I'm kind of curious, is do you have any stories that from, because the Bible has all kinds of crazy little stories in there that kind of I find really interesting. Are there any other biblical type stories that you might want to elaborate on or maybe flesh out a little bit besides this one?
Well, I do have a another book that I did write. The first book I wrote was actually called Elijah, and it was about a character, and it takes place in modern day, but it's this guy who has the ability to heal people just by touching them. So very much just like Jesus Christ. It doesn't matter what the illness is, if he touches them, or an injury, if he touches them, they will be healed, and there's no, catch or anything. He can just do it and that's it. And he is kind of walking the earth just in search of a reason, just trying to find out why he's been given this ability. And in this book, he ends up in this little bitty town called Antioch, which is it's a very little town, and it is essentially ruled by this one church and its one pastor, who, when Elijah walks into town, he is not having it with this guy. He absolutely does not trust him, sees him as a threat, and he ends up being kind of a challenge to the rule that he has over this community. So that's one. And then there's certainly no doubt that even if I have a story that doesn't directly reference anything biblical at all, per se, the fact that I've grown up right in the heart of the Bible Belt. I mean, I grew up going to church. I went to church all through college. I even still attended now, but it's impossible for it not to work its way somehow into a story I'm telling, some kind of influence out there, for good or ill.
Well, it's really interesting because there's so much I could talk about this whole business because I think about these things quite a lot. But this book is really kind of interesting because just like Second Coming, which I really have come to be a big fan of, this book has some really powerful messages that I think people would really benefit from it, even if you don't necessarily buy the whole business about what Jesus was doing in between in the grave and stuff, what was happening at that point. It's still got some good points to make. And, you know, I read somebody say one time that fiction is, if it's done in a certain way to communicate a point, that some people have said that that's worth taking on. People are smart enough to be able to separate what they perceive to be reality from the story. And so for me, and in fact, I have a real problem with animated shows because and certain books and stuff like that that portray Jesus in a certain way because it makes him less real to me. So I find that really interesting. But this book, I think, was kind of interesting because it's true enough to Jesus's character and what he could do that I really enjoyed it. And I really got a lot, you know, from reading it. And I really thought it was something that I would recommend to people.
Well, thank you. And one thing I will say, I know that we, went over the top a bit with Jesus' physique in this for obvious reasons, but there was, in addition to the fact that this was a barbarian story and we kind of required that visual, I also, it's a pet peeve of mine, and all of the classic art and so many of the films that we saw previously, Jesus was always portrayed as really kind of frail and just scrawny looking and meek. And I just thought, this is a guy who grew up the son of a carpenter working with his hands, lived pretty much outdoors and walked everywhere he went. This is not going to be some frail little nothing of a man. This is going to be a guy with some actual stature and some muscle on him. He's not going to be Arnold Schwarzenegger by any stretch, but I always felt like he deserves to be portrayed with a little bit more muscle tone than we've ever seen.
It's interesting because there was a long time ago, there was a Christian song that came out called Rise Again, and Dallas Holm did it. And it was all about Jesus saying, "I'll rise again," and very assured in what was going to happen. And several people came up to me, "Oh no, that's not the way Jesus did. Jesus did not know he was going to rise from the grave and stuff like that." And I was like, but did Jesus believe in God, you know, and if he had a faith enough in God, then he could face all this stuff. And oh no, he couldn't be that way. They almost managed him to be more effeminate, if it was a word that they used. And I was like, ooh, I don't think so.
I think there was even a parable he told about tearing down the temple in 3 days it would rise up that mm-hmm. some people interpret as him kind of foreshadowing that he would come back. So mm-hmm. I mean, that some of that is admittedly up for some interpretation, but yeah. All that to say, I don't think it's outside the realm of possibilities to suggest that he believed that he would be back.
Mm-hmm. But you know, even the most faithful have doubts at time, and so maybe he went, when you're looking, you're staring into the grave, maybe that your faith gets a little, it wobbles, maybe mm-hmm. because of that, because now you're actually face to face with it, that maybe you're not quite as secure as you were when you were far away from it. So as far as that goes, you know, but when I heard people say that, I was offended. I said, oh my goodness,
that's interesting.
That's not the way Jesus says. I was not an effeminate type guy or anything like that. It was a terrible word to use with them and stuff. So I just see this is you're delving into territories, and I think you do it well. You go in there and deal with things on a very a strong basis and a philosophical basis, I think, is consistent with what Jesus, you know, believed and stuff. Did this happen? I don't know. But it does have some messages that I think people would benefit reading from it. So even if on that point of view, I think that's why people read it. There's some strong things to say, and like the second coming, there are some things that if we're honest and look at things, you know, with an open perspective, we can learn things that might actually strengthen our own faith out of it. And I think that's what this book will do.
Oh, well, thank you. I had a thought and we drove it out of my brain. I was going to say, as far as like making points, and we you mentioned like having doubts earlier, I don't want to put out any spoilers, but that is the one part of it that for me, I thought this is the most controversial thing I can suggest in this entire story. And I've had, you know, we've had Mammon, the god of lust, surrounded by a harem of women, scantily clad. Mm-hmm. We've had decapitations. We've had hellfire. We've had, you know, just brutal beatings. Mm-hmm. But I just felt like there's this one. It's actually one single panel toward the end, and it all centers around doubt. And I just thought, when I was writing that in the script, I thought this is the most controversial thing mm-hmm. I could suggest in this entire story.
Mm. Well, it's a great book. It's definitely worth reading, and I don't mind having my faith, you know, examined every once in a while, and kind of say that there's things that it would benefit me to look at and read about. And this book has gone over pretty well, because it's really a very interesting story in the sense that, and I love the end. I can't spoil the end, but what Jesus says at the end, I really liked.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. And that's sort of like my mantra for life too, really. Mm-hmm. However bad it might seem, that there's still reason to keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very, very nicely done book. So yeah, I can see. Of course, this book is black and white. Have you ever thought about releasing a color version, or do you want it to stay black and white?
Well, now technically it is color whenever I send to the printer, because I do use the fire is yellow and blood is red.
Right.
But I stuck with just those two colors. And that was intentional, so I don't think I'll deviate from it, because I wanted it to have a look like something that was carved in stone back in that era. Mm-hmm. It had that kind of look of that old art style, which was going to be essentially black and white. So, yeah. So I don't think I'll deviate from that. And then I like how the fire and the blood, it really makes them pop out a lot more, since they're the only colors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, it's believe me, it's an interesting. I get a kick when Satan talks. It's his word balloons are reversed, It's got blackbird balloons with white lettering in it. And I thought that was a nice way to differentiate between, you know, Jesus when he talks and the devil when he talks. So it's really something about that.
I don't know what this says about me, but I found myself when I was scripting out that scene where Jesus confronts the devil. A lot of things the devil was saying to Jesus, I thought, this is what I would say to him. I don't know what that says about me, but
well, you know, it's a good thing to question and to examine and to delve into these things, and so I think that a lot of a lot of what the devil says to Jesus, I've heard people say this is the way things are, and so I'm very fascinated by that. Then, of course, like I said, I get back to what Jesus says at the end, and I'm very. You know, I'm encouraged. Let me just say that.
Okay.
Because it's a great book. It's really interesting, and I think that people, if you go into it with an open mind and you know, you don't mind having your being able to question things every once in a while, I think you'll really get a lot out of this book. Again, it's Jesus Christ Demon Slayer, and this is on Kickstarter right now. And let me get back to the page that tells me we're going to go back to it's going to conclude on Friday, April 26th at 12:48 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And it's only a $300 goal. Come on, folks. We can get past that, I'm sure. And going that, and let's see, you've even got some stretch goals in mind, if I'm right. No, maybe not.
I haven't announced them yet, but I'm always thinking about them. I hesitate to ever post them because I worry that jinxes it.
Okay. Well, it's a great book. I have to say, I highly recommend it. It's lots of fun to read. Really interesting. I'm glad I got to read the whole story. If I had read the first two and couldn't read the third one, I would have been upset. So this is a compilation of all three, right?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, this will be, it's been three issues thus far. So this will be a graphic novel collecting all of them in a single volume.
Okay, so it's going to be fun. That'll be good. I'll be happy with that because, boy, when I got to the end of the second one, I was going, boy, I hope I have the third one here because I want to be able to read that the way this ends because it had me hanging on by the end, by my fingernails by the end there. I had, you know, what's going to happen.
That's the highest praise I can get. Thank you.
It's a really, really good job. So it's very well done. Again, it's Jesus Christ Demon Slayer, a graphic novel. You go out to Kickstarter and you'll find it. And it's under, I'm going to make sure I get this, the Shore Manor Studio. So you want to be able to get out there. And if you see Matt Short's name on things, you want to be sure to pick them up and explore them because they're going to be very thoughtful and very interesting on many levels. So, Matt, just keep doing the wonderful stuff. You are a much success with this, and I hope we get to see a lot more from you in the future.
Oh, me too. And thanks so much for doing this. And just everybody, if they haven't subscribed to this podcast yet, make sure you do.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Sure.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.
What's that?
Well, the tumbler? Oh, you wouldn't be interested in that.
This baby works just fine.
So what do you think?
Does it come in black?